Rulers of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, the Battle of Arbela Gaugamela, Part 2, the units and the preparations for the final assault. Now, Darius's men waited for the Macedonians to position. Unlike at Issus, they didn't send out a cloud of light cavalry to skirmish. It was soon plain that the Persians were in the same formation as they were the day before. Now, Arrian cites Aristobulus that claimed that the Macedonians had captured a copy of the Persian Battle of Order, so the details in our sources may well be extremely accurate. The King of Kings was once again in a chariot at his proper station behind the center of the line, guarded by 1,000 royal cavalry, 1,000 apple bearers, those are elite infantry, and Greek mercenaries on either side of them. Elsewhere, the army was divided into ethnic contingents, the cavalry in the first line, with corresponding infantry behind in the second line. Darius's right wing was commanded by Mazaeus, former satrap of Cilicia, with Syrians, Mesopotamians, Medes, Parthians, and Saki, a nomadic tribe famous for heavy armored horses and superb archers, Tepurians, Hyrcanians, Albanians, Sassanians, Cappadocians, and Armenians. The left wing was equally powerful, led by Bessius, the satrap of Bactria, and a member of the royal family, albeit presumably a distant one, to have survived all the purges. He led the Bactrians, the Dei, from his own territory, and more Saki. Between him and the center were the Persians, the Susans, and Cadacians. Some infantry archers were in or near the front line, and a little ahead were the chariots in three main groups, 100 near the left wing, 50 in the center, 50 more on the right. Now, Alexander deployed so that he was facing Darius. As usual, in the center was a phalanx with the hypaspis on the right, next to six regiments of pikemen. Again, as usual, the king and the companion cavalry were to the right of the phalanx, and the Thessalian cavalry under Parmenio on the left, just as they had begun the battle at Granicus, and how they eventually moved into position at Issus. Even if he had placed all of his units in a single line, Alexander could not have matched the width of the Persian army, and in the open plain, there was no feature to protect either flank. Thus, for the first and only known occasion of any of Philip or Alexander's battles, the Greek allied and mercenary hoplites were arranged as a second phalanx some distance behind the main line. At the very least, the second line matched the first in numbers and length, and may even have been wider, but its primary role was not as a reserve. It was to turn and face to the rear if the enemy cavalry enveloped the army. Angled back were flanking forces to connect the two lines. On the right were the Paeonians and the Prodromo, half of the Agrarian infantry, archers, veteran mercenary infantry who had served under Philip, and mercenary cavalry led by Mendaeus. When the remaining Agrarians and some of the other skirmishers were a little bit in the front, the left wing was guarded by Thracians and allied and mercenary cavalry. Thus the entire army formed a rough square, or more precisely, some sort of a trapezoid, able to face a threat from any direction. Some servants, surely including many water carriers as well as grooms and others, were behind, or possibly between, the two phalanxes, while the rest stayed in the rudimentary camp pitched the previous day. This was not a defense, let alone a static formation. Simply fending off the Persians was not enough, for Alexander had to close with Darius and rout his army. Getting everyone in the position took some time, probably a couple of hours, and there may have been a pause as the two sides studied each other, and Alexander wondered whether the Persians would start coming to him. They did not. Remaining 2 or 3 miles away, and during the lull, Alexander no doubt encouraged his men. Earlier on, has him issuing orders that were surely standard practice, telling the men to keep formation, stay silent until the movement came to about their battle. It went till the moment came to shout their battle cry, and then to scream and terrify the enemy, and that they all depended on each other and would win if they worked together. Repeating the familiar while exuding confidence tends to be reassuring. He then gave the signal to advance. Unlike at Issus, we have no account of how this was done. Standard fighting formations, or went first in narrower columns until they got closer. Marching for 2 or 3 miles, even in such open ground, made it hard for individual units to keep in neat formation, let alone an entire army to stay in alignment, given its complex deployment. Quite a few halts to redress the ranks and adjust positions in relations to others were inevitable. for as far as we can tell, the army had never practiced an advance in this formation. From the start, Alexander angled to the right, moving away from the center of the Persian position in the middle of the carefully prepared tracks for their chariots, and this only made keeping alignment all the harder. Maneuver and drill are less dramatic than fighting, but once again, the ability of Alexander and his army to do this is a great testimony to the high quality of its leaders and discipline and confidence in the training of his troops. So gradually, the Macedonians closed with the Persians, never moving at a faster than a walking pace. Darius watched as they edged away from the bulk of his chariots and toward his left flank. He responded, sending orders for his troops to move in the same direction and to make sure that Alexander's right would be outflanked. Some Saki actually closed and skirmished with the light infantry, moving ahead of the Macedonian right wing. But it was much harder to direct and shift the far larger Persian host, which only completed its muster a few months before, and thus had little time to train together, as well as it being so multinational, which of course you probably have issues with the language that's being used through here, because they're not speaking a unified tongue as the Greeks were. So now we're ready to engage. So we'll be doing that in part 3. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arians, The Campaigns of Alexander, In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood, The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.